Where AI tools can be helpful is in a very quick way, automated way, help for you to serve as the reference check. It can help you in a very quick way reflect before you hit that publish button to course correct.
Macht's gleich. Weg mit Sexismus in den Medien. Ein Podcast von ProQuote.
Hallo, schön, dass ihr noch einmal mit dabei seid und zwar bei der ja wirklich vorerst letzten Folge von Macht's gleich, weg mit Sexismus in den Medien, euer Podcast von ProQuote Medien. Ich bin Sarah Stendel.
Und hier ist Liske Jags, hallo.
Wir sind Journalistinnen und eure Podcast-Hosts aus dem Vorstand von ProQuote und bei uns geht es wie immer darum, Medien gleichberechtigter und diverser zu machen.
Genau, und deshalb schauen wir uns in dieser Podcast-Folge einen möglichen Hebel an, der dafür sorgen kann, dass mehr Frauen als Protagonistin, Expertin und Meinungsmacherin in den Medien vertreten sind. Es geht um künstliche Intelligenz oder vielleicht etwas niedrigschwelliger formuliert, um technische Tools allgemein, die uns im Alltag beim Kampf für mehr Gleichberechtigung unterstützen können. Und um die Frage, ob das vielleicht die Lösung ist, auf die wir alle gewartet haben.
Ja, das wäre ja toll. Dafür haben wir uns Melanie Walker eingeladen. Melanie ist Executive Director for Media Development und zwar bei der World Association of Newspapers. Das ist eine globale Non-Profit-Organisation, die sich für die Rechte und die Unabhängigkeit von Journalistinnen einsetzt. Und sie ist verantwortlich für das Programm Women in News, das, wie der Name schon sagt, sich für Frauen im Journalismus einsetzt.
Melanie hat außerdem einen Gender-Tracker mitentwickelt, den jede englisch- oder arabischsprachige Medienorganisation kostenlos nutzen kann. Und wir wollen natürlich wissen, wie geht das überhaupt? Was passiert bei diesem Tracker? Ist es auch was für uns? Was kostet es eigentlich, so ein Tool zu entwickeln? Und wie geht man denn damit um, dass natürlich auch künstliche Intelligenz nicht frei von Vorurteilen ist?
Das und noch viel mehr haben wir Melanie Walker gefragt, die uns aus Kanada, und zwar aus dem verschneiten Toronto, zugeschaltet war. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Melanie, welcome to our podcast and thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
One of your goals is, for example, also to foster innovation in the digital world. You are also the so-called gender lead responsible for a program called Women in News. Maybe we could start with this and you could tell us a bit about what are your topics as the gender lead of the organization.
We at WANIFRA represent the world's press and we really work to identify industry-led solutions to problems and challenges confronting us all, as well as opportunities. And I think it would go without saying that gender inequality is a major issue still today in the media industry. Just over 10 years ago, we launched a small-scale project in Southern Africa with support from the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, SIDA, to increase the capacity and leadership skills of women media managers in Southern Africa. Not only were there a lack of women executives who were joining our programs, there were a lack of women in the media that we were working with. And we identified a different approach to try to build the capacity of women media professionals. And this was to look at networking, actual building networking skills and creating those professional networks. Someone much wiser than me once said that 95% of all new job opportunities come through your professional network. Yet women typically do not spend the time or invest that effort in building their professional networks. We also combined this with a focus on media management skills, looking at core management skills. And so we created a specifically tailored program to address this gap in the market, which also combined career coaching to sit with an individual coach to identify what your 3-year career objectives were, what your 5-year career objectives were, and to identify how best to get there. We found after running this for a few years that on average, we had a 1/3 success rate in terms of within 3 months of completing the program, women media professionals were increasing their income, they were increasing their level of management, and they were moving up the charts. So this was 10 years ago, and this is the origin story. This program has now grown. We are active in 23 countries. We're active all over the world running these capacity building programs. In parallel, we also try to provide research as well as direct support within the media sector.
So that's actually the core topic of ProQuota as well, is that we saw this lack and tried to address it in the German media landscape.
Germany actually trails behind the global averages when it comes to women at the most senior editorial position within media. And disturbingly, that has decreased from 2021. So whereas this statistic was 19%, which is dismal, it's actually fallen to 17%.
We're aware of that because the pandemic actually made it a lot worse. This is why we're also running our numbers each year and just to have the statistics to be able to change something. So you talked a lot about what you tried in the beginning to do, but if we're talking about breaking stereotypes in the media with your programs, what's the most important aspect of your work?
I think it's two-part. The first is awareness raising. I think unconscious bias is not something to be scared of. It's something to recognize exists in us all. It is the way that we categorize our brains, categorize information. This is something, how we make sense of the world. And so once you're aware of this unconscious bias, you can then take steps to overcome and rewire your brain. And so I think that's a really important first step. And this is something we focus on when we talk to managers, when we talk to newsrooms, is don't be uncomfortable by the fact that this exists. Recognize it exists. And then you can take the steps to start to correct. And it's an ongoing process. And it's not just gender-based. Of course, it's with all diversity categories. That awareness raising as a first step tends to be the aha moment. And then it looks at, okay, well, how can we look at everyday language? And this is particularly important when it comes to the media, of course, since we influence a much larger section of society than many other industries. How are we representing? What is our unconscious bias? And how do we course correct on a day-to-day basis? And this is, in one respect, the creation of our gender balance tracking tool, which looks at a few key indicators when it comes to content. Of course, with all AI tools, this is imperfect science, but in using it, it's a crucial awareness-raising tool. And so it just makes you stop and think.
The so-called Women in News Tracker, which is part of the program you just mentioned and you invented. But maybe before we talk about that in detail, one general question. Why do you think artificial intelligence, apps, etc., may be able to help journalists when it comes to gender balance?
I think that AI products and tools can help to, you know, and this is not just within journalism, but anywhere, it can help to increase awareness. And so, again, there is a limitation with tools because beginning with the creation of tools, they're created by humans. And so if you don't have a diverse group of people who are creating these tools, that inherent bias may be baked in. So that is a first challenge. A second is that many AI tools rely on historical data, which is historically representative of a certain group of people, predominantly white males. So this can distort data. Where AI tools can be helpful is in a very quick way, automated way, help for you to serve as the reference check. So of course, there always needs to be that human element that looks through from a quality control. It can help you in a very quick way reflect before you hit that publish button to course correct.
Can you give us a few examples from around the world where technology was successfully used to improve gender imbalance in media?
Sure. So we, as part of our program, track the data or track the content of our media partners. So we work with up to 80 media partners in a very engaged way across multiple fronts, changing organizational culture, looking at sexual harassment and eradicating that in the newsroom, capacity building for high potential women employees across the board. One of the conditions of our working with them is that they allow us and they give us permission to track their content and run it through the gender balance tracker so that we can, on a quarterly basis, collect that data and deliver it to them as a service that we provide to them. Most recently, we worked in a very comprehensive way to train up members of staff from our partners to do the tracking themselves and to circulate those reports to senior editors. These were active individuals within the newsroom. And we found that when this was done in a concerted way over a four-month period, that the average gender balance, and this might not seem too impressive, but it really is when you look at global trends, increased from 20% on average to 30%. So we saw a 10% increase when this concerted effort was made. Still far from our goals, our targets, but a marked improvement from those that did not track it internally on a regular basis. So this was very meaningful for us because it shows that when you do it, when it's owned internally, and when you actually distribute those results and those findings, it stimulates important conversation. It actually opens eyes to, oh my goodness, we thought we were doing a certain level. We're certainly not. This is embarrassing. Let's do better. And importantly, it makes you aware.
How exactly does the gender balance tracker measure? You mentioned before you have to get the permission to measure the data.
Correct. Yeah. So we don't have automated tracking. There are some internal APIs that allow for internal tracking. But again, we do it manually in the sense that it's a copy paste. So you take the content, you feed it into the tracker, and that is a manual process. And then it will automatically give you a score against four separate indicators. And that's how women are centered in articles, in what way they are brought in as key experts, in the authors, so who's making the byline, as well as are they the protagonists? Are they centered or are they, you know, observing and commenting? Our objective is to hit 50%. So we look at things in terms of if an article is considered balanced, if you have 50% balance between men and women. And I do want to recognize here as well that currently, and a limitation, but that does need to be recognized, is that when it comes to AI, gender is binary. It is impossible to address the fact that, you know, we do consider gender non-binary, and that automatically is exclusionary. To recognize that up front, that again, AI is limited. It's not going to be the be-all and end-all as a solution, but it does, again, help the individual when you're going through your content, when you're looking at your weekly reports, assess where your weaknesses are, where your blind spots are. And that includes, are you including women as experts? In what way are you betraying women as sources? And, you know, are you falling into certain stereotypes as well in the way that you are including women's voices when you are making a more concerted effort to be balanced?
You mentioned the biases of the AI before, and I was wondering, how did you try to address this problem while you were developing the tracker? Is there something you can do?
It's a learning process. It's, you know, machine learning. It takes time and it takes usage to improve. And so an area, for example, when it comes to name databases, there are issues sometimes that you can't determine gender by name. There are going to be needs to course correct. And also that comes from regional diversity when it comes to names. There are a lot of names, I mean, African names and Arabic names that the machine can't figure out. And so we are manually updating, tagging, flagging, and recognizing that some names are gender neutral.
Regarding the development, were there other obstacles you had to overcome?
There were limitations that we are working on now as part of a phase two. Sentiment, which is a really important element when you are looking at whether or not you are producing balanced context and news. How are you portraying? What are the words you're using to portray, let's say, a female politician versus a male politician? A very general, typical trope is that when introducing a female politician, you will refer to the fact, what's her marital status? Does she have children? You will comment on what she's wearing, her age. You just would not get that typically with a male politician. So these types of qualitative factors, currently we are unable to weed out when looking at bias. Again, we are looking at that, and it is about building up a database of keywords that you can reference. It is in progress. I think the name database is a big challenge. I think also the way the tool is used, it's to be careful that when you are using it on certain news days, you are going to have a predominance of a particular story that might be male-centered that is going to skew your overall results. And also looking at things over time to try to be as balanced as possible. if Trump goes off, and this is certainly when he was president, you would have entire news days dedicated to the chaos creation. You need to be sure that you are taking into account when you are looking at the data.
So measure and track your progress is one of your key recommendations for media. I was wondering, do you think it's possible to create gender balance without tracking?
You know, if you can't see it, you don't know it. And data is really the clearest way, counting heads, counting numbers. It's not the only way, but it's absolutely critical, I think, to also be able to track your improvement and to track progress. And so while I would say it's not the way, it is a foundational way. You need to combine that also with conversation and with education and awareness raising. And I think having the conversations around unconscious bias, having conversations about diversity, understanding things like gender and not being afraid to talk about these terms and definitions and what it means, it's also extremely important.
You mentioned on your website that it is crucial to share the data with the staff in order to unite them behind this goal. Is it difficult to get people on board?
I think it is. There are a number of steps that are necessary and they're mutually reinforcing. If you collect this data and you don't share it internally, then what's the point of doing it? It's so crucial. And this is why we really encourage to have someone within the newsroom who has a level of seniority to be able to get the attention of the necessary individuals in the newsroom to distribute the results, and also so that it doesn't get put in a separate box of, okay, this is, you know, in HR, this is diversity and inclusion initiative. No, this is a newsroom initiative. And just like you would do fact checking, this is a component of fact checking, and to consider it and change that culture internally and change the process to be changing that mindset. It's very important to do that and have that centered in the newsroom. Newsroom culture, changing organizational culture, that has to come from the top. So none of this will work unless you have buy-in at the most senior level. That's the CEO, the publisher, the editor in chief. Once you have that buy-in, the rest flows much easier.
Maybe you can drop a few names, because as we understood, the tracker is for media and English only so far, right? So where has it been used?
We are using it primarily with our partners who are predominantly located English speaking as well, but also Arabic language throughout sub-Saharan Africa. 18 media were sort of part of this pilot, and essentially it's open to anyone. So we do have sort of individual users who do not create accounts and we don't actually know who they are. I think in terms of wide-scale usage, I can say that we don't have major media using it on a regular basis. We do, however, have a number of our members that have created their own internal systems that actually are built into their publishing systems and so are part of an API that helps them track this. A number of media in Scandinavia who are, again, very focused and quite advanced in this have been using these types of tools that follow the same principle.
And what has the response been like to your tracker?
I think that like many initiatives that have good intention and practical requirements of time and effort, response is positive, but actually uptick is what is a frustrating element. It's hard to, especially in today's context, in the past couple of years, with everything that's been going on with the coronavirus and the disruption within the media industry, finding the time and resources to actually use this tool is our biggest obstacle.
You just mentioned the Scandinavian countries who are far better than we are most of the time. Do you know similar technologies like the tracker, which are used maybe in European countries or especially also in Germany? Do you have examples?
I don't know of any in Germany. I know that there is a Swedish one that is an open source one that is being used. And there are a number of English language tools as well that are readily available. So the tools are out there. The question is, how do we get media to actually incorporate them in their day-to-day production?
Yeah, and what about the costs of technical tools like these? Can you tell us how much you needed to develop the tracker?
Yeah, it wasn't cheap. Part of the reason why we actually decided to create this tool and to embark on this journey, and it's been a four-year journey, and I think if we had a lot more money and resources, it probably would have been a shorter journey. I would say all in, it's probably cost us around 75,000 euro, which would be considered quite cost efficient for many. We've done it on a shoestring. But again, I think the value of these types of tool is to, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect. It doesn't need to be exhaustive. It is meant as an indication to point to you, okay, I'm on the right track. Or, you know what, we're not doing very well this month. Even looking at the number of authors, let's say, contributing to articles, that's a much more straightforward tracking and process. It serves as an indication and a benchmark.
Could you give us some examples? What could be small key solutions? You mentioned one or two, but do you have others in mind?
There are a number of approaches you can take, obviously using open source tracking tools such as ours. Again, you know, you just need to Google it and you can find other tools that are available. You can start as simple as creating a spreadsheet, looking at the number of authors you have on a weekly basis in terms of, you know, who's delivering the content and covering what topic. Are you inadvertently only having, you know, when it comes to finance news or science reporting that is coming from, you know, male reporters? That also goes to experts. You can do flash assessment where you say the first Tuesday of every month, everyone takes a look at their content and contributes to a database, a centralized database, to say who contributed, who are my main sources. I think the most important thing is having an internal driver. That internal champion really needs to have the support of the CEO, top management, and has to have some authority to be able to actually, you know, communicate and try to push for that change. That takes resources and that also takes goodwill.
Do you maybe have other examples of fields where AI could come in handy for female journalists especially?
Where AI tools can be particularly helpful is in the area of creating safer spaces for public figures online. This is particularly helpful for women journalists, politicians, or other personalities who will find themselves often the target of online violence and harassment. So AI tools and using NLP, natural language processing, can start to create those safer spaces, which is, I think, a really exciting development and an area that I'm sure a number of organizations are also looking at and providing tools that are free for journalists and other public figures to be able to apply. One of such tools is called Block Party, and it relies on a combination of machine learning and natural language processing to help identify hateful language and put all of those accounts and posts into a folder that is locked and put away. It protects the user from it and also allows them to share the folders with editors or friends to review as well, and also to track. It is important, certainly, to be able to maintain that information if, in the worst case scenario, some of this harassment would escalate and you'd be required to find incidents and history of this type of behavior against an individual or bots. So Block Party is one. It relies mostly on Twitter. There are certainly other ones out there as well, but that is just one example of a way that AI really is helping to protect and create safe spaces for women journalists or journalists of different diversity categories that may be more at risk than their counterparts.
What are your future projects? What are you working on currently?
We would love to bring in new elements to the gender tracker. So looking at visual photos and images, there are tools out there that do that separately. And I think that that also is extremely relevant when you're looking at how our visual events being portrayed. So that's something we'd like to develop more, as well as audio and for broadcast. Right now, you know, we are mostly focused on print. And when it comes to radio, we can take transcripts, but actually being more sophisticated in how we are expanding that into radio and broadcast. And finally, the sentiment, qualitative elements that when we first started out, and again, it's such a learning curve, but when we first started out, we really had the intention of having this be 8 indicators. Right now we have 4. We wanted it to be 8 of that, which really looked at gendered language and stereotypes, because that's so important. And we, you know, hope to be able to develop that also in the next few years.
So we're coming to an end, unfortunately, but in the end, we always ask one question, because our podcast is called Macht's Gleich. And in German, that can mean 2 things. First, do it right now. Or second, make it equal. And we therefore ask every guest the same question, including you. If you could change one thing right away, right now, regarding gender equality in media, what would it be?
Oh gosh, how do I narrow it down to one single thing? I would say tackling that percentage point. I keep reverting back to talking about having organizational buy-in, having buy-in at the most senior level, the executive level, to bring about the necessary organizational change and goodwill. When I look at the numbers of top management on the editorial side and also on the business side, women are grossly underrepresented. And so I would make that equal at very least, because I think then too, you can fast track a number of other changes that would need to be implemented in terms of priorities. So equality at the senior editorial and management level within the media industry. We can do so much better.
Thank you so much, Melanie. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Likewise, it's been a pleasure.
Nach dem Gespräch mit Melanie haben wir wie immer unsere Expertin Margret Lünenborg, Professorin für Journalistik an der Freien Universität Berlin, um ihre Einschätzung gebeten. Lohnt sich der Aufwand für Redaktionen, so einen Tracker ins Daily Business zu etablieren? Immerhin muss er manuell bestückt werden oder es muss sogar ein eigenes Tool entwickelt werden, das mit den eigenen Redaktionssystemen funktioniert.
Der Gender Tracker, basierend auf künstlicher Intelligenz, erleichtert erstmal ganz ungeheuer ein permanentes Monitoring der Sichtbarkeit von Männern und Frauen in Nachrichtenproduktion, in dem, was Zeitungen als journalistischen Content erzeugen. Ich halte das für eine ausgesprochen lohnende, ja gar nicht so sehr Investition, sondern ein lohnendes Engagement, mit dem Zeitungen auch langfristig wirklich eine klare Transparenz und Kontrolle der eigenen Produktion erzeugen können und sich damit auch verpflichten, zumindest eine Balance zwischen Männern und Frauen in medialer Produktion anzustreben. Wir wissen insgesamt aus der Forschung, dass Nachrichtenproduktion die Ungleichheitsverhältnisse systematisch verstärkt, das über Jahrzehnte immer wieder gemacht hat.
Also können Medien da einen starken Einfluss nehmen und haben auch da so eine Art Verantwortung für unsere Gesellschaft. Und warum ist denn gerade das Zählen dabei so wichtig?
Ich halte es für relevant, dass es tatsächlich verobjektivierte Zahlen gibt, die fortlaufend zeigen, wie sieht's denn aus bei uns in der Produktion. Denn das konnten wir in Studien auch nachweisen. Mit Angela Merkel als Kanzlerin war die subjektive Wahrnehmung, dass wir doch eine ungeheure Präsenz von Frauen in der Politik haben und diese eben auch medial sichtbar werden. Wir haben aber nachweisen können, dass ja, Merkel mit dem Amtsbonus als Kanzlerin eine hohe Sichtbarkeit erzeugt hat, in ihrem Schatten aber sozusagen andere, auch hochprominente Politikerinnen deutlich unsichtbarer geworden sind. Von daher bietet ein solches Instrument eine echte Chance, systematisch daran zu kommen und dazu Veränderungen beizutragen.
Melanie Walker sagt ja, dass der Gender Tracker für 10% mehr Frauen gesorgt hat, dort, wo es bisher angewendet wurde. Ist das nicht ein bisschen wenig bei dem Aufwand?
Der Spiegel beispielsweise hat das ja vereinzelt gemacht und war immer am Ende ein bisschen selbst erschrocken zu sehen, wie ungleich die Repräsentation ist. Und ich glaube, das ist wichtig zu verstehen. Es geht ja gar nicht um, ich sage jetzt mal, die böswillige Annahme, dass intentional Journalistinnen und Tinnen nicht Frauen befragen, sondern um routinisierte Praktiken, die in den täglichen Handlungen oft unter Zeitdruck ja auch gar nicht immer so weit reflektiert werden. Und ich bin zutiefst davon überzeugt, dass nur mit einem systematischen Monitoring, einer ständigen Bestandsaufnahme, die sozusagen zu einem Baustein von Qualitätsprüfung wird, sicherzustellen ist, dass das langfristig, dauerhaft und nachhaltig eben wirklich verändert wird.
Vielen Dank für die Einschätzung. Und bei euch wollen wir uns jetzt auch bedanken dafür, dass ihr unseren Podcast gehört habt. Vielleicht ja sogar alle 3 Staffeln.
Wir hoffen, ihr konntet einiges für euren journalistischen Alltag mitnehmen und wisst jetzt, wo und wie ihr für mehr Gleichberechtigung kämpfen könnt. Ich habe auf jeden Fall viel gelernt und mir hat es total viel Spaß gemacht.
Ja, und wo das übrigens außerhalb des Jobs noch sehr gut geht, ist als Mitglied unseres Vereins Pro Quote Medien. Also hier nochmal der Aufruf. Wir würden uns riesig freuen, wenn ihr bei uns mitmacht, um die Medienlandschaft gerechter und diverser zu machen. Dafür könnt ihr einfach auf pro-quote.de klicken und auf Mitmachen gehen.
Und Liske, jetzt noch ein allerletztes Mal. Bist du bereit?
Ja, klar.
Okay, also macht's gut.
Macht's gleich.
Tschüssi.
Ciao.
Macht's gleich. Weg mit Sexismus in den Medien. Ein Podcast von ProQuote, gefördert vom Bundesministerium für Familie, Senioren, Frauen und Jugend, produziert von Pool Artists.